It's Stokely and Zach on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
I'm Rod Sharon in for Zach Bye. Stokely and Zach, we're hanging out at Blake Street Tavern. Park and Blake, just in the shadow of Coors Field, one block north. Get on down, register to win a baseball, fly away to Houston to see the World Series champs play, the World Series champs, excuse me, playing against Colorado on August 14th. Trip includes airfare, lodging, and tickets to both games. Case Keenum.
Wow, that's a nice little
getaway.
I know, it is.
Yeah, so come on down, register to win. So Case Keenum on with Sirius XM, talking a little bit as we kind of continue. Our question was who's winning this summer, and he's been a big part of it in terms of just the calm that's over the Broncos in comparison to a year ago when you had a quarterback competition. And look, we all know Vance is on the hot seat, but he's not going to get fired during training camp. It's going to take us into the season. They're going to see how things go. He's been a good source of the calm. So he sat down with Sirius XM Radio and talked a little bit about the situation here with the Broncos.
It's a great situation. I mean, you know, I wouldn't trade, you know, any of the past situations I've been in because they made me who I am. You know, there's been a lot of tough times, you know, a lot of times that people may be looking in on the outside thinking that, you know, they're bad times, they're tough times. But, man, it's made me who I am, and it's prepared me for this moment. I'm excited to be the Denver Broncos quarterback.
That's why I like Case right there. That's why I really like him. He's been through some tough times. He's fought through adversity. He's been at the bottom. He's been looking for teams. Nobody's wanted the guy. Nobody's given him a chance. That's the kind of quarterback I want, lead my team. Yeah, a scrappy guy. Kind of reminds me of a little bit of Trent Dilfer. Okay. And my former quarterback in college, Jake Delhomme. Trent, just because he's a scrappy guy like that and, you know, wasn't always pretty, but he found a way to get it done. And Jake Delhomme was kind of in the same situation, that just bounced around for a while, was getting cut, was back on a roster. Nobody wanted to give him a chance and finally got his opportunity and did well with it. And he just kept getting better and better. And I'm thinking that's going to be Case Keenum. But I like that mindset from Case that, you know, I'm not taking anything from granted. And when things get bad, it's not going to be anything that he hasn't gone through before, because there will be bad times throughout the course of the season, whether you lose two games in a row or three games in a row. How do you respond to that? When you have back-to-back bad performances as a quarterback, how do you respond to that? Well, Case Keenum's been through all that before.
Well, and if anything, now he's got more kind of support behind him that he's had in the past, because he is the guy here. This isn't like last year with Mike Zimmer when, man, you just have a bad game. He might put Teddy in next week, or right. Sam Bradford South, he might put him back in. How important are those experiences that he had as kind of a fledgling, you know, quarterback on Houston and then later with the Rams? How important were those to get to the guy we saw last year in Minnesota, and we hope we'll see even take another step here with the Broncos?
Well, that's big. I mean, and that's the type of guy I want. I want a guy that I know, you know, has been through some tough times and knows how to fight out of those tough times. And you know what? One bad game ain't going to cripple the guy. You know, all of a sudden, he's going to lose his confidence because he plays one bad game or two bad games in a row, or you have a three-game losing streak as a team. Look, that's not going to affect Case Keenum. He's been through some tough times before, and that's what I want from my quarterback. I want a quarterback that's been through that. When you draft rookies, that's part of the process, is how do they handle the adversity? And so when you get a quarterback like Case Keenum that's going through everything that he's going through, and people can look at it as a negative, like, well, he's only had one good year. Well, yeah, he's only had really one opportunity, one real opportunity where he got a lot of playing time and they kind of turned the reins over to him in a good situation, and he did something special with it last year. That's the guy I want, and I think the Broncos are fortunate to get a guy like that at the price that they got him at, and I think he's only going to continue to get better and better with the more reps that he gets.
Just as we're talking right now, so many of the great quarterbacks, it seems like, Stoke, went through some kind of hardship. You know, Tom Brady, sixth-round pick, you know, chip on his shoulder his whole career. Aaron Rodgers, humiliated as he falls on draft night. Drew Brees, second-round pick, too short. Then the shoulder injury, he had to prove himself all over again. We're moving on to Phillip Rivers. Then he's got to go to find a new team and prove that he can do it. I mean, even in Peyton's case, and I know Peyton was the first overall pick, everybody knew he was going to be good. You know, he had the neck injury. Like, late in his career, he had to prove that he could come back from and go to a new team and start over. And he winds up having the best years of his career. So it seems like
I mean, it's a pretty good year.
Statistically, he had the best years of his career here with the Broncos. So My point being, it doesn't seem like the story of the guy who was always the greatest. Everything came easy to him. First round draft pick, waltz right in, never goes. It doesn't seem like there's as many of those success stories as there are the guys you're talking about who are grinders.
Absolutely. And because those guys know how, look, you're going to go through some tough times, and a season's never going to be perfect. And how do you handle those situations go a long way in determining the outcome of the year for your team and yourself, because there's going to be a lot of downs in the NFL, and you're going to have some performances that just make you sick, and you can't sleep at night. How do you bounce back the next week? And what happens if you do it 2 weeks in a row? That I want a guy that I know. Look, I know this guy can handle it. And a lot of times that's the hang-up for young guys trying to make it in this league. They just can't overcome bad performances and bounce back and get things back on track quick enough.
Well, look, we have high hopes. We're hoping the Broncos can go far. Obviously, Keenum was in the NFC Championship a year ago. He played in some big games. Talking with SiriusXM Radio, he talked a little bit about that taste in his mouth left from the NFC Championship and then pushing that forward to the Broncos.
You know, he's put some incredible people in place, you know, with Coach Musgrave, you know, Coach Sullivan, our offensive coordinator and quarterback coach, all the staffs, and you know, they've done a great job. So, you know, having a lot of people in the building is, you know, that have played quarterback and know their quarterback position. You know, it can't ever hurt.
Case Keenum talking about John Elway and what he's put around him, but I wanted to specifically get to that point about the going far in the playoffs. Here's what he had to say.
It left a taste in my mouth to know how to get there and what it takes to get to the next one, the big one, and man, it left a fire in my belly, man. I want to get there.
Fire in his belly, I want to get there. Those were the words I thought that would really capture kind of the attention of Bronco fans that I think you got a guy driven to win and driven to compete. That's not a shot on Trevor Siemian or a shot on Paxton Lynch, but you just never heard them say stuff like that.
Well, once you get there and you're so close to the ultimate goal, you're one game away, and that's the ultimate now for him. You know, I've got to get back there. I want to get back there one more time. You know, once I got a taste of the Super Bowl, yeah, I won it all, but, man, there was nothing like it. I want to get back to that level again. And if you've never gotten there, you don't know that feeling. And the fact that he's gotten to an NFC Championship game and fell a little bit short, I like that. It's going to only motivate him to want to get back there and do whatever it takes to get back there.
You know, it's interesting because the Denver thought I had as you were talking about that, Stoke, was Jake Plummer. And he never really got the shot to do it. You know, they go to the AFC Championship, they lose, they have this good team, and then, you know, Jay Cutler gets drafted. I mean, come on, writing was on the wall. It wasn't going to happen.
That's always a real possibility. You know that as a player. They're not a given, that they're not just handed out. You got to go out and earn it, and a lot of things have to go your way to get those types of opportunities to play in the NFC Championship or the AFC Championship or the Super Bowl. So we'll see. Hopefully he'll get another opportunity.
I think he's going to win over this fan base, which is not easy to do at that position if you're not great, because this is a fan base.
You got to win
John
games.
Elway,
bottom line,
Peyton,
right?
Manning.
You got to win games, and then
but,
you have
but
to
you
have
know
the
what?
Other
even
stuff.
Jake Plummer won games and wasn't necessarily beloved when he was.
Why
there.
Not?
In fact,
why not? Tell me why.
Because he wasn't John Elway. I don't think he didn't win the big one. And now you've got Peyton Manning, who's been here since then. And I get that you want to win big, but it's interesting. I think Plummer's kind of reputation, at least amongst Bronco fans, seems to improve with time. He does well with time because now you see how hard it is to have those guys. So you appreciate the fact that, yeah, you know, he wasn't Peyton Manning or John Elway, but he was still pretty good. And because of that, maybe that helps a Case Keenum a little bit. I think the more this guy, I keep using that word calming presence over the team, I think it's going to go a long way. Speaking of going a long way, Rockies last couple nights against the Diamondbacks, getting over that hump, Stoke.
Looking
finally
good.
And not just narrowly getting past it and squeaking new in a fluke. No. They put it on the Diamondbacks. Our Rockies insider, Patrick Saunders, is here at the Blake Street Tavern to talk about it next. I'm Rod Sharon in for Zach By. It's Stokely and Zach live at the Blake Street Tavern. Park and Blake just one block north of Coors Field. Come on down. Register to win a baseball flyaway to Houston. You'll see the champs take on Colorado August 14th. Trip includes airfare, lodging, and tickets to both games. You can maybe even hang out with the guy who's sitting right next to me, because I imagine he'll be there covering the Rockies. It's our Rockies insider from the Denver Post, Patrick Saunders, presented by Rox Heating and Air. That's ROX Heating and Air. And Patrick, boy, the narrative changes the last two nights of, you know, the Diamondbacks always kicking around a little brother, and then things have changed a little bit around here.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, 19-2, that was insane. But truthfully, I think yesterday's game was kind of more important.
How so?
Well, you know, as Nolan Arenado told me, the 19-2 game, those happen every once in a while. It's kind of fluky. It was just a weird night. But yesterday, you had a pitching duel early between two very good pitchers. The Rockies were able to hang in there. They were the ones during crunch time in a tight game that came through with the big hits, the better bullpen, all of those things. And more important, they won their first series against the D-backs in a long time. And it was a big win for the Rockies. I think we talk about all the time the difference between football and baseball and big game versus not a big game. Yesterday was a big game. You could tell the vibe in the clubhouse. That mattered for the Rockies to make a statement and beat the D-backs. I really think so.
I mean, and they did it. Look at this group and the way they've kind of rebounded the last two or three weeks. Who has been that guy other than Nolan that you think has kind of carried this team through what they've gone through the last 3 weeks and, you know, getting out of that slump that they were in and to get right back into the West?
Well, it's starting pitching for sure. Now, we have not seen starting pitching like this from the Rockies almost never. So that's been the catalyst. Kyle Freeland's been terrific. Marquez has been good. Tyler Anderson has been excellent. But position player-wise, Nolan, of course, Trevor Story's been incredibly hot. He has the second-highest batting average in the National League since June 1. I think it's close to 370. He's been amazing. And the guy that everybody loved to hate earlier in the year, Ian Desmond, has played some pretty good baseball of late. He's had a number of big hits. His first base play has improved. I don't think it's great yet. But up and down the order, they're getting contributions, and it's nice to see because this team was underperforming so long, in my opinion. I still think the weak link and the scary part of this team is the bullpen. What, you know, let's face it, this team's only going to go as far as the bullpen can carry him, and so far it's been a disappointment.
And you saw all the resources they put into the bullpen this offseason.
Yeah, $106 million.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot of cash. When we get close to the trade deadline, if this team is right there in contention to be in the playoffs, can they go out and spend some assets to add to that bullpen even more?
I think they will if they can. And what I mean by that, Stokes, is the Rockies are one of a number of teams that want that missing piece. We already know, for instance, the Red Sox have already inquired about Adam Ottavino. He's in the final year of his contract. He's been the Rockies' best reliever, but the Rockies essentially told them, hey, guys, we're not done yet. In other words, we still may be in this. We're not going to start trading Adam Ottavino or DJ LeMahieu or somebody like that. But to your point, yes, the missing ingredient that the Rockies need right now is a solid seventh-inning reliever, somebody to bridge to Ottavino and Wade Davis. There are some guys like that out there. The problem is a lot of teams, the Astros, the Red Sox, even the Yankees, certainly the Dodgers, everybody wants that guy.
Right.
And it depends on how much do you want to give up. The Rockies traditionally are reluctant to give up really high-profile prospects, a Brandon Rogers or Garrett Hampson, somebody like that, in order to rent a reliever for half a year. That's not in their philosophy. It's not in their blueprint. Part of me says, you know what, maybe you need to change the blueprint for a year because you may not have a better chance to win the NL West than you have this year.
Brian Shaw, could he be that guy? I mean, obviously, yeah. We know his struggles. You know, he took some time away on the DL. He's back, had one inning, no runs. Could he all of a sudden find the guy that they thought they were getting this offseason?
You know, it's funny you say that. He said almost the exact same thing to me the other day. I interviewed him about him coming off the DL, and the way he looked at it, he's very confident in himself. He says, listen, people are always talking about second-half trades, et cetera. Maybe I'm going to be that guy you don't trade for but who emerges as if you got that missing piece in the second half. He's very confident that his track record will make sure that he is that guy that they counted on so early, not the guy who was a 7-something ERA
right.
And has become the whipping boy for the Rockies' terrible bullpen. That remains to be seen. I think it's going to be a while before Bud Black trusts him in that role. They're going to wean him back into that
sure.
role. We'll see. But you're right. If he can be that guy, The big problem is solved, but I just don't know if he is that guy.
Patrick, why? I mean, I would have guessed if I didn't know him what's going wrong with him this year has been confidence. That would have been my guess, but you're telling me he's confident. So
well,
what's been going on?
You got to take him at his word, but body language, to me, from an outside looking in, the number of big hits that he's given up, the number of losses that are charged directly to him, it's got to be a jolt to his confidence. He's never been through this before. Now, he told me the other day that the calf injury that put him on the DL, which I had been calling a phantom injury, I thought it was just an excuse to put him on the DL. He was making the case that, no, the DL had, or the DL, the calf injury had messed with his mechanics and made his arm a little weary, et cetera. I'm not quite sure I buy that, but that's what he told me. But
I hope that's the case. It would make me feel a lot better, wouldn't it?
The fact of the matter is his velocity is every bit as always been. The ball is moving. He's got a cut fastball. That's his bread and butter. It's moving like it always has. His location has been crappy. Let's face it. He's left the ball up, and he's got hit. Already given up 8 home runs already. That's as much as he's ever given up in the entire season. Buddy Black insists he gets the ball low in the zone, throws the pitches he's known for, makes the ball move and behave like he wants to, he's going to be back. That remains to be seen. They all swear it has nothing to do with altitude and Coors Field. Not sure I buy that either. I think it's a huge adjustment for guys, and I think it bites them a lot harder than they think it's going to. That's my opinion.
Hey, real quick, Patrick, Chad Bettis, what's the latest with the blister?
He's not going to pitch tomorrow. He's in line to pitch Saturday. That blister is not going to enable him to make the start. We'll find out here shortly, probably within an hour and a half, 2 hours, who will start for the Rockies tomorrow. I'm not sure who it's going to be. Chad's frustrated. His arm's great. He's in a pretty good place. He's never had a blister before, but he's trying to figure out how to pitch through the pain or avoid the blister.
It's not
so
fun.
That may be a while.
It's not fun for a pitcher.
No.
To have a blister on the hand. So you going to stick around?
Sure.
One more. We're going to feed you good down here.
Sounds good.
Food over there. I got a question about the Rockies possibly being sellers at the deadline. I want you to answer next. We're joined now by Patrick Saunders, Rockies insider from the Denver Post, presented by ROX Heating and Air. That's ROX Heating and Air. Patrick, got to ask you, you know, we've talked about the Rockies possibly being buyers at the trade deadline. When you look at some of these contracts that are coming up next year, that guys that will be free agents, Ottavino, DJ LeMahieu, what's its odds, what's the chances are that we see one of these guys being dealt, and who do you think it would be?
Well, I think a lot of it depends on what happens over, say, the next 10 games or so at the Rocks. They got 3 against the Mariners, a very good team, although the Mariners are hurting right now. And then they have 3 more after the break at Arizona. Then they have, I believe, and somewhere in that string, they have a couple against Houston.
Yep.
So it's a tough slate. If, let's say, let's pick a date, July 21st or something.
Do you know when the trade deadline
yeah,
is?
Yeah, July 31st.
Okay.
So as they approach it, if they really are in the hunt, they're not going to trade away players. They're not going to be a seller. If they go into slump or something, they might. And you mentioned DJ LeMahieu. Final year of his contract, as far as I know, last I talked to DJ, there have been no talks about extending him. He, in my opinion, would be a great piece for a number of teams. He's a winning ball player. He's beloved in that clubhouse. He does everything you want. Solid guy, solid player. I think DJ possible. Ottavino, where you already talked about, there's been a number of teams, including the Red Sox, who have inquired. I haven't heard anything, but I've seen speculation about Cargo. He's in the final year of his contract. If somebody wanted a, you know, a power bat, Cargo's best days, I think it's fair to say, are behind him. He's been okay this year. He hasn't been great.
Probably wouldn't get a lot for him.
No. Gerardo Parra, club option next year, but he's in the final year of his contract. So there are a number of pieces that the Rockies might be interested in selling off if they're not in the mix. But right now, the front office thinks it's going to be in this for the long haul, certainly into August and September. So I don't see anybody being shipped out right now.
Out of that group, who do you think the Rockies prioritize to bring back next year and to go after and retain their services for next year?
It's a great question. I would think.
Of course it is, Patrick. Oh,
gosh.
You, that's, Nothing like an NFL player.
This guy,
wide receiver.
Yeah, wide receiver. Diva.
Diva. That's right. Nothing T.O. like... and Stoke, two peas in a pod.
How many setups can you do? Anyway, your question. I would think the guy they most likely go after to retain would be Ottavino, because he's in a great place. He loves Colorado. Bullpen help is always needed. They have a lot of young guys coming up through the system that they think can replace DJ LeMahieu. I happen to disagree. I think they should sign LeMahieu and go after him, try to keep him here. But Brendan Rodgers, some other guys are coming up through the farm system. I think Ottavino would be the number one priority if they try to keep somebody.
All right, well, speaking of keeping somebody, the big topic, it seemed like a week ago, now it's died down, was the future of the franchise player. And Nolan Arenado, with some of the comments he had to you and that have worked their way around and not wanting to be on a losing team, wanting to be on a team that wins. And look, now this conversation seems that much different a week later because the Rockies – or 2 weeks later because the Rockies have been winning some games. Where do you see that moving? Are we going to be following a roller coaster as the Rockies go up and down as it relates to Nolan, or do you think there's a specific plan in place to either make one type of decision or another, Patrick?
I think the storyline is pretty much set. Nolan has said to me and others he wants to play for a winner, be it here or somewhere else. This season could determine whether in Nolan's mind the Rockies are indeed a winning franchise. So that's the first part of the storyline. There have been no negotiations to keep him beyond next year. Nolan said, and Jeff Breidich, the GM, has said they didn't think Nolan was sending a message to the organization, which, in my opinion, is BS. Of course he was sending a message to the organization. Go out, make the moves, do the things it takes to be a winner like the Dodgers, the Yankees, the Red Sox, those type of organizations. Do those things, and I'll think about staying here. You don't do those things, I'm as good as gone. And I believe that's the truth. It's not about the money from Nolan. We know that's going to come. He's going to get paid. I've said it time and time again. Nolan wants to play for a winner. And if I had to make a bet right now, is Nolan going to be a Rocky after the 2019 season? I would say no. I mean, I'm sorry, but that's just my honest assessment of the situation. It's not that he has anything against Colorado. He loves his teammates. He loves the fans. Don't get me wrong. But that's just his mindset.
Well, the way it's set up in baseball, you don't have to choose. Like in the NBA, you can go join the Warriors, but you got to give up money.
Right.
If he goes to the Yankees, he's still going to get the big money. It doesn't matter.
He might get more.
It just literally.
You try to get out in front of it, Patrick, in this offseason, make it priority number one.
Do the Rockies try to do that?
Yeah. Let's try to get this thing done. And then you know moving forward, if you can't get it done, then you come to the point where you say, you know what, we're just dealing. Machado's going to probably be dealt.
Breidich is a smart guy. Those guys down at 20th and Blake, third floor offices, they know. They have a blueprint. They know what's at stake here. They know what's at stake money-wise. They know what's at stake in terms of the fan identification with this franchise. They know all of that. My guess is they will make Nolan at some point a fair offer. We will end up knowing what that offer is.
And what would you say? Is that 10-year, 250, 10-year, 300?
I don't think 10 years. I don't think anybody – Nolan's 27 now, I think, or 28. I don't think anybody is going to get a Stanton deal of 10 years anymore. I just don't see that. I think the last offseason showed us that. 7 years, 6 years with a lot of money is more in the ballpark. We'll know this year with Bryce Harper becomes a free agent. But I think $200 million and up is realistic for Nolan. The question is – can the Rockies be the kind of franchise that can dole out that much money to one player? And you can't blame them for wondering if it's worth it to them to do that. As great as Nolan Arenado is, he's a once-in-a-generation player. But economically, can this team afford to do that? And I'm not sure they can.
Do they look back, and I'm going the opposite way if you want to keep Nolan, but do they look at the Helton method? And obviously, it's a lot less money because it was a different time, but they were paying Todd so much during that time, and they didn't win. Is that something you think that comes up in
those meetings? Look at the Tulo situation. Tulo had a contract that they simply couldn't live with anymore, and then he got hurt, and thankfully Nolan has been incredibly healthy. The economics of this make it a very difficult decision. Sometimes sentiment is trumped by the blueprint, and it may be tough to swallow, and I'm not shipping Nolan out of town right here or anything.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, it's still only July of 2018, but the idea of what's going to happen long term, it's going to color the franchise for years to
come.
And
you, so, like you said, you have to start thinking about that now and this
offseason. You do, and you're exactly right when you brought up the point. Are they proactive and they decide this is what we're going to do? And realistically, the way the roster payroll is set out now, although they pay Charlie Blackmon big money, Ian Desmond's making $22 million this year, but it goes drastically down after that. They are set up to free up some money down the road, so it's not like they've closed the door completely.
Right.
But the way I read it, it's going to be difficult to make it work.
Last one, Patrick. David Dahl, a guy that, you know, I watch and you see the potential there. And, man, they could use that type of bat in this lineup. What is his status, and do you expect him back? Do you expect him back soon?
He is going to start, I would guess, his rehab assignments in the minors probably next week. He's back. He's hitting in the cages. Next step is live BP, live pitching, against live pitching. Will he be back? Probably. The problem is, I got to wonder if the Rockies think there's room for him right now on the roster, because the outfield is in pretty darn solid. Parr has been good. Charlie's been good. Cargo's been pretty good. David Dahl, for all of his talent, struggled against left-handers when he first came up. I imagine at some point he's going to be back this season, but if he's not, it wouldn't shock me.
Rockies and Mariners tonight. Coors Field, rare to have Seattle in town. We'll interleague Sensatella on the bump, 640. Patrick Saunders, our Rockies insider from the Denver Post, presented by Rox Heating and Air, ROX Heating and Air. Thanks, Patrick.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Patrick. Around. Good stuff,
so,
buddy.
So Nuggets make a huge move last night, Stoke, Isaiah Thomas. But can he accept a smaller role? We'll break it down next. I'm Rod Sheeran, in for Zach Bye. Stokely and Zach at the Blake Street Tavern. Stoke, the big move of last night, the Nuggets have signed Isaiah Thomas just a year ago. MVP candidate, two-time All-Star, guy averaged just under 30 points per game. And then it felt like his star even increased in the playoffs when he was, you know, had a 50-point game, just bigger than life, right? Then the wheels fall off. He needs a hip surgery. He gets traded for Kyrie Irving. He's not fitting in with the Cavs and hurt. They ship him to the Lakers, and then suddenly here we are, and he's signing a minimum contract for $2 million, and we're hearing for the role to come off the bench. Can a guy who's used to, throughout most of his career, being the man on his team, an MVP candidate,
right,
handle that role of coming off the bench and just doing your job?
He's got no choice, Raj. He's got no choice. I mean, this is the situation that he's in. You know, like you said, he's dealt with the hip injury, hasn't been the same player the last 2 years, been traded a couple different times, and now when you go into free agency and nobody's knocking on your door and you have to take a one-year, $2 million contract, do you see these contracts that some of these guys are getting? This guy only got a one-year minimum contract.
To go play in Denver.
So if that's not humbling, I don't know what is. He knows what his role is. He knows Mike Malone. They've talked a few times. I'm sure it's been discussed. This is going to be your role on this team. And obviously, there wasn't a lot more offers out there. Not more lucrative than this offer, or he would have taken one of those offers. So he knows his role. He knows he's going to be a backup, and he should get a lot of playing time, but also he's here to mentor these younger guys. But he's a backup player right now, and that's just the situation that he's in. Hopefully he can maybe hit the free agency market next year.
Well, I'm sure that's what he's thinking. He's
on a high
himself.
Note. Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Does that worry you a little bit, though, that, you know, he's going to try to go out there and show he's the same old Isaiah Thomas? He can score 30 points a game. He needs the ball in his hand. When really it's, listen, dude, this team goes through Jokic. We've got Murray. We've got Harris. We've got Paul Millsap. Will Barton. We just need you to be some scoring punch off the bench. Role changes, not everybody handles them the right way. Matt Hasselbeck handled it great when he kind of just naturally went from starting quarterback to veteran, mentor, backup quarterback. Other guys, you know, not so much. You'll hear players say, no, I am a starter. I need to be a starter. It's important. I've always been a starter. I'm a starter. I'm the scorer. Everyone handles things
right, differently. And that's a concern, obviously, whenever you're dealing with a guy that, like you said, was an MVP candidate a couple years ago, and now he finds himself in a backup role. And he finds himself in a role where he's not a starter, he's not the main guy anymore. How does he handle that, and how does he handle this situation? That's why you got to have a conversation with him and be very open with his situation, and Mike Malone and him have talked. And
that's the key for me. That makes me most comfortable, that Malone wants this. This would be an easy GM, like, hey, it was a great value. Hey, coach, go take this former guy and mold him. But it sounds like it's the opposite. The coach is the one who wanted the player because he has a comfort level with him.
Absolutely.
That helps.
And you know what? You got to have a plan in place for him, and he's got to know what that plan is. And obviously they've discussed it and they talked about it. And you look at a guy like that, and you always concern yourself with having some issues possibly with, like you said, is he going to want the ball too much? Is he going to be taking too many shots because he's going to be a free agent next year and wants to show that he can still play at a high level? Or will he play team basketball? And so if you put those parameters in place and you let him know the situation and what you expect of him and what he will be asked to do, then moving forward, it's pretty easy, and there's a relationship that's already there with Mike Malone and sure. Isaiah Thomas. So I think the situation will be good for both parties, and hopefully, you know what, he has a really productive year, and he hits the market next year because he's a guy that, you know, it's hard not to like him. A small guy that's the scrappy guy that came from nowhere, you know, wasn't he a second-round pick?
Late first or second round
pick, and then had some great years there in Boston and got traded away. And just the last couple, you had that bad hip injury. Last couple years hasn't been the same, or the last year hasn't been the same. And now he's got an opportunity here, and I think it's a great pickup by the Nuggets. And I think it will be he was a second rounder. I think it will end up being a really, really good move for him also.
Sometimes my fear isn't necessarily like attitude-based. Like, I think that's where we go.
Right.
Like, can this guy handle it? Will his ego be? But sometimes it's just a football fit. And one that popped in my head was Jamal Charles last year. And I don't know if it was an attitude thing. I can remember him making comments like, I'm used to getting the ball 20, 25 times. It's weird for me to come in and just get all carry and then come out. I can't get into a rhythm when you're used to being that. And I think of a guy like Isaiah Thomas, who's always kind of had the ball in his hands. For a majority, not just of the time on the floor, but a majority of the game, and then to go into a bit of a different role.
We'll see.
He may thrive. I don't know.
We'll see, you know, how it plays out, and I'm sure that they have a plan in place for him, and it's been discussed. And, you know, you talk about Jamal Charles, you're trying to get me upset again. I know it is Friday, and I'm in a good mood, and you're trying to make me upset by bringing
up
Jamal
Charles. I'm
trying to. And I think Jamal was a little bit bummed out because they had a plan in place for him. And he followed it to the T, and he showed them as good of a
version of him. Remember, we had, like, the one preseason game. We wanted to see. Okay,
Green Bay Packers.
Like,
yeah,
three carries. And we were like, oh, yeah.
I remember. And he followed it to the T, and he looked as good as he possibly could. And he started the season off by getting a lot of reps. And gradually, every single game, they went down every single game. And so it was just an odd situation and very different than I think he thought how it would play out and how they talked about it being played out. And for Jamal Charles, you know, when you show the best version of yourself and you show that you can get things done and reps are taken away from you, you know, I'd be a little bit upset also.
That's the key. You said it. Communicate. Talk to.
Communicate.
What did they say to Isaiah Thomas? Did they make it very clear? Isaiah, we just want to be clear. This is the role we're envisioning for you. Jamal Murray is our guy. Okay.
Well, you were right. He bet on himself, and I'm sure
he bet on himself.
I'm sure he could have had other opportunities to sign with another team for 1 year, $2 million.
Right.
And he thought this was the best fit on this young team. He'll get a lot of minutes, and he'll be mentoring some young guys with a lot of potential. But there's minutes to be had here, and he can showcase himself. And I'm sure that was discussed with Mike Malone. I'm sure they will have a plan in place. But look, he's going to get plenty of minutes and opportunities to go out there and show if he could get back into, you know, right, the Isaiah Thomas of a few years ago.
And look, it's a long season. I'm Rod Sherrington for Zach Bye, by the way. Stokely and Zach at the Blake Street Tavern. There's 82 games. There can be injuries. You might need nights where you need him to be that old Isaiah Thomas, for all you know. You know, you always kind of look at a team and just assume everybody's going to be there and how's it going to work. But that might not be the case. And he could be a guy who could fill that scoring role if they need it.
That's
especially
right.
If there's going to be an injury. Yeah. I mean, Will Barton's changing roles. I mean, we're assuming he's changing roles this year. He's scoring bench. I mean,
he's not going to pay him that much to be a sixth man.
Yeah, he's starting.
Right. He's a starter. So you need a guy coming off the bench that can, you know, score some buckets for you. And hopefully that's going to be Isaiah Thomas.
You know, what's interesting is because I started this talking about guys accepting a smaller role. I can only think of one example.
I can't stop looking at your shoes. They are so awesome. Wow. And I'm not a high-top guy, but Melo, yeah, I didn't even know he had his own shoes. Those are so cool, man.
Star players get signature shoes.
I know. So. I just don't ever recall those. And you busted them out. Those are good-looking shoes. Sorry, go ahead. I just can't stop looking
at them. Well, I was going to bring you up because I've heard we were talking here about accepting smaller roles. So I was trying to think, was anybody upset or frustrated by a larger role? And I thought about you. You signed with the Broncos thinking you'd be the number three receiver. Guys get hurt. Suddenly you're starting.
All right. Yeah, I'm getting paid.
You're the only guy I know. It's like, I don't want to be a starter.
I'm getting paid bare minimum, and I'm coming off of an Achilles injury. I just kind of want to work my way back into the lineup, and I was healthy and feeling good. And
was it like Javon Walker?
Javon Walker. Yeah. Next thing you know, Javon Walker, you know, complaining about his knee, and he goes on to have knee surgery. And next thing you know, it's me and Big Brandon Marshall, B-Baby, are out there starting. But, man, it was fun. We had I had so much fun that year. Obviously, the year before was really frustrating for me with the Achilles injury and to watch and to just be hurt that whole year and to watch the Colts go on to win the Super Bowl and not be a part of it. So to be able to be out there and all of a sudden be a starter on a team with, you know, Tony Scheffler and then Jay Cutler, we were just slinging around there having fun, was a lot of fun. But my role expanded, and it was a lot more than I expected coming into it.
It was the opposite of the Isaiah Thomas discussion.
It was the opposite. It ended up paying off for me because I ended up signing an extension here and staying around here for a few more years. So it worked out well for me. And then they drafted Eddie Royal, and it was Eddie and Brandon Marshall outside. And then I just was back into the slot position. And
what was it like then going back from starting into a smaller role?
I loved it. I mean,
I
loved it. I mean, that was my role. That's what I wanted to do, and I thought it would preserve my career, and I felt more comfortable at that time playing in the slot. I mean, when you pretty much practice for 4 years in the slot and you don't do a lot of outside stuff hardly at all, you just get used to working in the slot. And so when you go back outside, all of a sudden it's a little bit foreign for you. It's a lot different position than it is working in the middle of the field. So that to me took a big change and took a little bit of adjustment for me to get used to going back outside.
So you mentioned in there, though, you knew it was going to preserve your career. Not a lot of athletes like think the long game all the time. It's just kind of right here, right now. So if Isaiah Thomas was sitting here and you could give him advice on, hey, I don't know, am I going to like this six-man role in less minutes? What would you tell him?
Well, it's you know, football and basketball are a lot different when it comes to your body and staying healthy.
He's coming off the hip surgery just like you were coming off.
Right. He came off the hip surgery, so he had 1 year to kind of get things back. And sometimes these injuries take, you know, a year plus. And even though it might be a 10-month and you might be back, it takes you a full year to get back to who you are. And I would just say take advantage of your opportunities. And you got a great opportunity here to mentor some guys. But you're going to get a lot of minutes. You're going to get your fair share of minutes to show that you can be the old Isaiah Thomas and that you can play at the level that you once did a couple years ago. And then it's a perfect situation for you because you will be a free agent.
How you mean like the that? Old Isaiah Thomas, not the old Isaiah Thomas.
That's right. Just the old, not the old.
Not
Isaiah
the old,
Thomas.
Old.
Was that pretty
Isaiah
good, Coach?
Thomas. That was pretty good.
If I was
good job.
I
would
that.
Sign up.
All right. There we go.
There he goes. I'm Rod Sharon in for Zach By. It's Stokely and Zach. We're here at the Blake Street Tavern, Park and Blake, one block north of Coors Field. Come on down. Register to win a baseball flyaway to Houston. You're going to see the World Series champs taking on Colorado August the 14th. The trip includes airfare, lodging, and tickets to both games, but you have to come down here to register to win at Blake Street Tavern.
Cool.
We're
going
to be here for another hour. That
cool
is a cool prize.
Yeah, get down here and register. Have you seen the celebrity golf thing that's on this weekend, the Tahoe one?
No. I mean, I see it up on the TV right now.
Yeah, but Romo's playing in it. And so I don't
Your
think,
favorite
I don't,
announcer, Tony
I
Romo.
I don't know if – I don't think Elway's playing in this year. He might have played last year.
Okay.
So we'll see Romo can be in contention in the end.
Speaking of guys getting better real quick, what are you thinking for Tony Romo in year two, broadcasting? You got higher hopes this year?
I do. He hit a peak there where he started to get better, and he wasn't guessing every single play. And then in the playoffs, it went crashing downhill. He went back to the old Tony Romo. So I'm hoping.
He became playoff Tony Romo.
Yeah. He followed the script of his playing Tony Romo. Oh. You got me in trouble, Ross. I don't want to bash on Tony Romo.
Bash on Tony Romo. I did him like eight times on what I got beef with, but I don't want to bash on Tony Romo.
I mean, you can't just keep guessing every play. And it just doesn't, you know, for me, it doesn't make good football. And half of them were wrong. You're only right 50% of the time, but, you know, you never talk about those times when he's wrong. All anybody talks about is the 50% that he's right or the 25% that he's right. So hopefully, for my sake, I can actually watch a game that he calls and listen to it because I love Jim Nantz. So hopefully he improves.
Do you believe in addition by subtraction? I'm laughing because it's stoked. I'll ask him right after the Denver Snapshot.